Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, and welcome to our August episode of Third Thursdays with Ruthie. You might have guessed, but I'm Ruthie Goodbow, co-chair of Ogletree Deacons Traditional Labor Practice and a shareholder in our Pittsburgh and Detroit metro offices. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. But we get together once a month to talk about all things labor related. Sometimes it's just me, but often I'm joined by a guest, as I am today. So please welcome to our podcast my colleague and good friend, Bud Bobber. Bud is a shareholder in our Milwaukee office, and he's going to provide some valuable insight how to manage politics in the workplace in what is certainly turning out to be a volatile year. Bud, welcome.
Thank you, Ruthie, and thank you for having me on your podcast. This is a great credential for any labor or employment lawyer to be on Third Thursdays with Ruthie.
Oh, well, thank you for that compliment. Just a little fun fact about Bud. He says he's a retired marathoner. He started 7 marathons. He finished 7 marathons. He says he's slow but steady, but his times have all been between 314 and 329. So in my mind, that's pretty fast. So we'll see if he can get through the marathon of this podcast. So, Bud, this is an election year, and it really seems to be shaping up of one of the most tribal, hostile, vitriolic one that I've seen in my lifetime. And the rhetoric is still ramping up, and I think it's only going to get worse. I've heard you say this easily can invade the workplace, and I'm just wondering, what do you mean by that?
Ruthie, I'm watching the same thing, and I think employers have to plan right now for how to manage what might be a real high-stress time for their workforces. It really is all about the stress, and people react differently. Some retreat into themselves, and they shut down, and so you're going to see less collaboration and teamwork and engagement. Others, as we know, act out on stress, and that creates conflict and maybe bullying. Everybody gets distracted by stress, and again, that impacts productivity. So I think if you're not planning for it, especially, you're going to see decreased productivity, morale. You might even lose some talent if you get internet word of mouth out there that your workplace is a politically volatile, maybe almost hostile one to people of one party or the other party. You may even struggle in recruiting and hiring. I think the bullying and harassment that we're seeing on the internet and at social protests and the like, those are all people issues, and people are people, and they don't stop being people when they come to work, and they bring their people issues to work. And you know, these social issues that are happening now in our culture, in our country, are people feel them deeply and will speak out on them even when they come to work. And that's going to offend others in the workplace, all of which leads to conflict.
So I think we're all expecting, and this is an understatement, I'm sure, a bit of a bumpy road over the next 4 months. The political acrimony is only going to increase through the presidential election and may linger afterwards. Some people will be unhappy about the outcome. So I think these issues are really important because, as you said, people are people and they bring their feelings to work. And those feelings in this time especially may be very passionate, very emotional. And so you mentioned something about productivity, and I'm wondering if you're seeing any effect on productivity right off the bat.
This really caught my eye back in February. I mean, even before we layered on to this election season, the complication of the coronavirus pandemic and all of the stress on individuals and companies and workplaces that has come with that. Even before that, Ruthie, there was a survey done in February, and it really woke me up to the fact that this political season is going to be a particularly volatile one in the workplace. Let me just give you a couple of stats. I know they're hard to digest on podcasts, so I'll just limit it to just a couple. But from the February survey, 78% of responders said that they were discussing politics at work, and nearly half of them, 47%, reported as of February that they thought that the 2020 presidential election had already impeded their ability to get their work done through distraction or otherwise. 36% of the responders said that they had already chosen to stop talking to a coworker because they knew his or her political views and they just didn't want to get into it. And so you can imagine how collaboration, teamwork, focus is all going to go down, down, down as those stressors ramp up.
So you talked about people avoiding their coworkers because they don't want to get into it. But then we also have those folks, you know, as an employer, I'd be worried about those folks that maybe instead of choosing to disengage, decide to engage at high levels. And so there might be an increase in bullying and in harassment and very worrisome, even potential violence. Do you share those same concerns?
No doubt. And those are my biggest concerns because we're seeing otherwise peaceful protests turn violent as people confront protesters or protesters confront others. And the issues that are front and center right now and politicians are leveraging to speak to their base and attract people and stake out ground are really highly volatile issues. You know, you think of even the law enforcement funding issue. You think of immigration, which was just reignited with a Supreme Court decision on DACA. You think of LGBTQ rights, which again is front and center as a result of the Supreme Court decisions. You think of healthcare issues that are leveraged by politicians. All of these things are hot political topics that people feel very passionate about. And so many of them implicate these protected categories that you and I, as employment lawyers, we really care about and focus our clients on, you know, race, gender, national origin, religion, and the like. And when people get passionate about those topics at work, they can start impeding on other people's rights and the tension can escalate. And I fear when the shouting turns into finger pointing, which turns into finger poking in the chest, which turns into a full push, which turns into somebody taking a swing at somebody, and then the weaker person pulling out some other form of weapon to wield in the workplace. That's a worst case scenario, but I think we got to be realistic about the possibility of those, to plan for them and try to avoid them.
But I think you've touched on something, you know, employers are already, I would say, I don't want to say at their wit's end, but they've been hit with so much this year. And so I'm sure that they share the same concerns that we've raised. What's the solution? What do we do in this situation?
As I was thinking about this, Ruthie, I think you can boil it down to 4 points that are worth keeping in mind and assessing as an employer. Which of these do we have to address? The first point is, I think you got to know what law applies in your jurisdiction because there are differences in laws that relate to political activity. And there's mainly state and local. There's not a lot of federal law right on that point. Second, I think you have to consider maybe issuing a new policy and focusing people on it, or just revising your policies that might apply in these situations, your conduct, your civility policy, your use of the company bulletin board and property, maybe your social media, those types of things. Third point, I think some training, as always, is really useful on the front end. Tell your management team, at least, here's our position as a company on political activity in the workplace, and here are some tools we want you to use to damp it down, recognize it when it's happening, step in and dampen it so that it doesn't escalate. And fourth, As with all employee relations issues, then enforce your policies consistently. You know, you can't enforce them against the proponents of one political candidate, but not the other, or vice versa. Then you're going to lose credibility in it, and it will spin out of control.
Well, Bud, you know, I always like 4 points, 3 points, and I'm sure our listeners, we always talk about, you know the law, look at your policies, train, enforce. But let's start with looking at the applicable laws. I'm not sure if I even know where to look. So where, point us in the right direction. What should we be looking at?
You know, and we can't do it in a 20-minute podcast, Ruthie, because it's largely state and local laws. And so you're going to have to rely on either your HR people, your in-house legal, or your favorite Ogletree lawyer to help you get your arms around your jurisdiction's laws. But let me just give you a sense of the types of things that are out there. Some states actually list that political affiliation, Republican, Democrat, Independent, is a protected category under the employment laws, and employees can't be discriminated against because they're a recognized Democrat or Republican or whatever they may be. You'll find that type of law in California, Colorado, Nevada, Louisiana, Washington, and Madison, Wisconsin, close to my hometown here. So you got to know if people have that protection. People have a lot of voting protections too. In Texas, it's a third-degree felony to retaliate against a voter for voting one way or the other, for example. Lots of states and municipalities have rules that require employers to give people time off for voting or time off to serve as election volunteers. So you really got to start from a position of just understanding at our particular workplace, what does the state and local law require of us as employer regarding the political activity rights of our employees? Find those out, know those, respect those, and you've covered the first of my 4 points.
Okay, good. Listening to that, kind of going down that list, that's always the challenge for our multi-location employers out there, trying to figure out what the rule is in a particular state or particular jurisdiction. I know you said there wasn't much, but my guess is there's some, at least some federal laws that come into play during this kind of whole political season, political speech issue discussion.
Certainly, if there is bullying or harassment of a coworker against another coworker, and it on the surface, it may be related to politics, but right below the surface, it could be related to a protected category. So, for example, if a couple of employees in the break room always chant, build a wall, build the wall, build the wall, every time a Mexican-American employee comes into the break room, he or she may go to HR and say, I feel like this is a hostile work environment. And because that issue implicates their national origin, that's something that HR specifically has to act on. The other federal law that we certainly keep our eyes on as labor lawyers is the National Labor Relations Act. And just quick reminder to all your listeners, all of your non-supervisory employees will have rights under the National Labor Relations Act, even if they're not in a union. It gives rights to non-supervisory employees. And the ultimate right is that so-called Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act. And if somebody's speaking out in a way that is for the mutual aid and protection of themselves and their coworkers on a workplace issue, like terms and conditions of work, wages, benefits, hours, scheduling, those types of things, that can be protected activity, even if you don't like the content of what they're saying. Interestingly, we got this recent decision of the National Labor Relations Board that gave employers a little more leeway on managing outrageous comments by people and not just automatically protecting those as Section 7 activity. But you got to be at least aware of this. And before you discipline or fire somebody for political activity in the workplace, at least run it through the analysis, the filter of, boy, could this be Section 7 activity? Because if it is, and an unfair labor practice charge is filed to challenge the termination, the employee could get reinstated with a make-whole back pay remedy and the employer required to make a posting saying, we won't do that again type of thing.
You know, one of the cases we talked about, just to give an example, is criticizing a presidential veto of an increase in the federal minimum wage and then urging employees to register to vote to defeat our enemies and elect our friends. That's, to me, like one of those gray areas. Is it political speech? Is it protected concerted activity? So that's kind of an idea of what, Bud, you're talking about. Now, but I'm not going to let you out of this podcast without talking about the First Amendment, because we hear that all the time. They say, I have a right to free speech. I can say whatever I want. How do you respond to that?
It's funny, Ruthie, that happens a lot at my clients' workplaces. And sometimes the employee is so emphatic and seems so confident that they have this First Amendment right to say whatever they want at work and they can't be punished for it. I'll have managers call me and say, and actually start wondering, is that right? And no, it isn't right. Everybody's First Amendment right protects them against the government impeding the right to speak out. And so on their private time, people can say what they want. They can go to a protest and scream repugnant things if they choose to do that on their private time. But they don't have the First Amendment right at work. At work, employers have the opportunity to regulate people's speech, to promote civility, to promote productivity, to promote a focus on work. And so managers even have to be reminded of that so that they can manage the very confident employee who believes that he can just say anything he wants.
So we always leave this to the end because that's how we keep our listeners listening. What do we need as employers to do to plan and manage for this election year?
You know, you won't be surprised to hear me say there's no one size fits all because different companies have different culture. Some companies actually embrace the culture of promoting a vigorous and open debate about ideas, and that can include political ideas and the like. I think there's some guideposts that we can follow while we're still weeks away from the election. As I mentioned earlier, you really could dampen down the opportunity for conflict in the workplace by eliminating those sources of political information and media in the workplace. Do you have a television on in the break room that one person turns on MSNBC and hollers at it while another person goes up and turns on Fox News and hollers at that, and then the two of them holler at each other? Well, just put that TV on National Geographic or the Disney Channel or something for the next couple of months. You don't need to promote political activity in the workplace. I think you really should consider issuing a new policy and rolling it out with some instruction to everybody. And the one I like is the simple one that says work is for work and just emphasizes to people that we want to avoid the distraction, the conflict that comes with political debates and arguments in the workplace. And just remind people that working time is for working. And that we don't want to have debates on non-work topics in politics during this season. And you can go so far as to prohibit any kind of derogatory comments, name-calling, attacks about anyone, not just coworkers, but you can prohibit, if you choose, insulting, demeaning comments about any individuals, including political candidates. And just say that violates the way we want people to behave in our workplace and hold people accountable for that. And then the key is really, rolling that out in a training that emphasizes it to everybody and reminds them, you don't have a First Amendment right to say whatever you want here. And we want to respect everybody's viewpoints and right to have their opinion and even feel passionate about it. But our first priority is to maintain our engagement with each other and with our work, our productivity, and our commitment to the company and the product and services that we're creating here. One last thing I got to mention, you should plan for this not to end on Election Day and think a little bit past Election Day. Back in 2016, the Psychology Today magazine did a survey, an engagement survey, that showed what happened in the days after the election. And the people, survey respondents who voted for Secretary Clinton, suffered a drastic reduction in their engagement with their work. And it wasn't for about 8 days until their engagement level was back at pre-election levels. So the company lost about 8 days of focus and engagement from roughly half its workforce. And so you got to plan for that now. And maybe that means if there are deadlines on big projects, if there are other really important things happening in the company in that first week of November, you might try to proactively consider how to manage those in the context of having roughly half of your workplace disengaged for several days or a week or more. And now we're getting some indications that there may be challenges to the election results in terms of legitimacy of voting by mail and the like. And this thing could drag out for weeks or months. So I think even though it feels like we're getting close to the election now, I don't think our challenge in managing the workplace stress of this 2020 election is going to end on November 3rd. And I think smart employers are going to be considering that sooner rather than later.
Boy, a lot to think about, Bud. You know, I'm going to show my age here, but I remember the drawn out swinging chads, hanging chads, all that big count and how everybody was kind of left wondering what the outcome would be. And I think that's a great point and a really interesting intersection of some of the legal ramifications and business itself is don't schedule your most intricate or important projects the couple of days after an election. And I also think it's kind of interesting that that jives with what we always talk about and we've talked about on this podcast before about union elections and what happens after a union election and before. So I think all of your really appreciate all of your insight because I think it's applicable not only just to an election year, but throughout throughout the course of your work environment. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Today, I'm going to leave you with a quote as I do the crossover a little bit here. You've heard me say something similar to this when we're talking in the context of labor law, but in the context of democracy, the quote that I've picked for today is from Larry Sabato, and he's a professor of political science at the University of Virginia. And it's a very simple quote, but it has such strong and important meaning. And so the quote is, "Every election is determined by the people who show up." Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only, and is not to be construed as legal advice.